Welcome to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Governor Peter Shumlin's decision not to seek a fourth term in office has set off a mad scramble by potential gubernatorial candidates. And a decision by incumbent Lieutenant Governor Phil Scott to run for governor has opened up a lot of interest in his position. How are these political races shaping up 11 months before Vermont's primary election? Today on Vermont Edition, we've got a panel of some of Vermont's best political reporters to discuss these races. We've got Dave Graham of the Associated Press, Terry Hallenbeck of 7 Days, and Neil Goswami of the Vermont Press Bureau. Great to have you here, Dave. Thanks for coming on the program.
Glad to do it.
And you can join the conversation here at Vermont Edition. You can give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. What qualities are you looking for in a gubernatorial candidate? Is it important that this person has government experience, or is a fresh face needed to offer a totally different perspective? And what are the key issues that you feel need to be addressed in the upcoming gubernatorial campaign? We hear things about health care, property tax reform. What's on your list, the top priority issues of 2016? Give us a call, 1-800-639-2211. You can always send us an email at vermontedition@vpr.net. Or give us a call, 1-800-639-2211. So let's start off with the governor's race. We've already got 5 candidates. It's very possible there could be more in the coming months. On the Republican side, we've got Lieutenant Governor Phil Scott and business person Bruce Lisman. Scott says he's running because he thinks a lot of Vermonters are struggling financially, and he wants to take steps to strengthen the state economy.
As I travel around, you begin to get a complete understanding that folks are struggling. And it's about the costs of living, the crisis of affordability that I've been talking about for quite some time. They're struggling, working 2 and 3 jobs sometimes, trying to make ends meet. They're trying to pay their property taxes, which have skyrocketed, and they've been screaming for relief in that area as well.
This week, we found out from a Castleton poll that Phil Scott has the highest name recognition of any of the 5 candidates. That's probably not a big surprise, and also the highest approval ratings. So, Terry, as this race starts, is Phil Scott the favorite for both the GOP nomination and the general election?
I would say that he starts out in that position with a lot of time, and a lot can happen in the next year and year plus. Just his favorability rating and his lack of an unfavorability rating, like he's not very many people dislike him. That's huge. That's going to be hard for his opponents to come at. So he starts in a strong position, definitely.
Dale, what do you think?
I think Terry's absolutely right. You have to, he's got some major advantages working in his favor. He does have that 77% favorability rating. He's run a statewide campaign 3 times now and won with a significant majority of the vote. And he's sitting on at least $150,000 in his campaign account. So given all of those factors, I think he has to be looked at as the clear front runner at this point.
Dave, having high name recognition and high favorability has got to be a good thing to start with.
For sure. And I think Neil has it right. Just having appeared 3 times now on the statewide ballot, people out there are kind of used to seeing the name there and thinking about this guy as a state leader, and so they clearly see him in that role, having elected him 3 times to be lieutenant governor, and he's a very personable and popular guy. He races at Thunder Road, and he's been doing these tours of businesses where he goes out and works for a day in various jobs around the state, and some people regard that as maybe a little bit hokey, but it's effective because he gets out into people's workplaces and actually meets them where they work, and I think that really raises his profile as well.
On the other hand, there are some challenges that he's going to face. Running for lieutenant governor, he hasn't had to stake out a lot of very clear policy positions. Running for governor, he will have to do that. And that could impact the high favorability rating he has among independents and Democrats going into 2016. Once he starts to lay out very clear, specific policy goals, some of that support from, moderate Democrats and independents might start to peel away a little bit.
So, Terry, as we look at Phil Scott's strengths and some of the challenges, what would you list as some of his strengths?
His strength is his experience at running a statewide campaign. His that people like him, people trust him. That he has people have voted for him. You know, Democrats and independents, the people sort of who the swing voters, the people who will split a ticket, have voted for him. So they're not unwilling to do that. But I think, as Neil said, when we get into this race and it becomes about the issues, he will have to step it up. And I think he knows that. And we'll see how that plays out.
Dave, you know, over the years, there's been some question if Phil Scott really wants to be governor. Does he have the old fire in the belly, as it's commented on? Is this something that he needs to address during this campaign? Or do you think his more easygoing style is actually what voters want to see?
I suspect that this is pure speculation, but I think that actually his mild manner works in his favor. You know, he actually, I think most people who meet him come away thinking, boy, there's a nice guy, you know, and thoughtful guy, and that is something that, you know, certainly has the potential to fly in Vermont. I don't think, the pressures of a gubernatorial campaign in Vermont are anything like people run into running for president on the national scale, and so that fire in the belly thing, I don't think is quite as much of a factor here. I mean, Jim Douglas always, you know, has come across as a very mild-mannered fellow, and obviously he put in, you know, he was famous for putting in long hours, and I think that's something that any candidate for governor has to do, and any governor really has to plan on working a lot of hours. But, you know, I think that's something that if Phil Scott is in the race, I'm sure he knows that, and he's thought that through and said, okay, I'm really going to commit myself to this now. And I think his manner will not hurt him in the least. It may help him.
Today on the program, we're looking at the 2016 gubernatorial race. We've already got 5 candidates in this race. There very well could be more in the coming weeks and months. What are your thoughts about this race? 1-800-639-2211. Is there a candidate that you like right now? We'd love to know who that person is. Also, the kinds of qualities that you're looking for in a gubernatorial candidate and what you think the big issues are. A recent poll by Castleton showed the economy was by far the top issue for those people responding to the poll. Is that true for you? Do you think economic conditions are the number one issue in Vermont? 1-800-639-2211. Now, a challenge that Phil Scott is going to have is he's co-owner of a construction company that does business with the state of Vermont. Those contracts have been worth a little over $3 million over the past decade. Now, in order to avoid a conflict of interest, if he is elected governor, Scott says he'll put his share of the business in a blind trust so that he never knows if his company is bidding on a contract. Some Democrats have been very critical of this arrangement, because they say the Agency of Transportation will always know that it's Scott's company bidding on a contract. So is Scott's approach going far enough, or is this an issue that he might have to revisit during the campaign? Neil, what do you think?
I think this is more about appearance than any actual wrongdoing or potential wrongdoing. There seems to be enough firewalls built into the system that it wouldn't really be very possible for a sitting governor to influence whether or not a particular contract is awarded. But at the same time, I think that the lieutenant governor has a challenge in convincing Vermonters that there is nothing wrong with this, that he has sufficiently set himself apart from the company and that it's being run entirely apart from him and his administration.
Dave, what do you think? Is this a problem for Phil Scott, or do you think voters are willing to accept this blind trust idea?
I think the perception could be a problem, but I think the reality is that if you look at $3.8 or $3.9, I think it is, $1 million over 15 mm-hmm. years, that's really a pretty small amount of money when you're talking about bidding on state construction projects. I mean, when you have an individual, you know, an individual road project or even a roundabout project can cost $20 million, you know, to think it's less than $4 million over 15 years, if somebody really closely examined the record, they'd see that DuBois Construction, Scott's company, has not been all that successful over the years in terms of A, bidding on the contracts, and B, getting them when they bid on them. And the checks Neil talks about are very important, and I think the most important of those checks is that when you bid on a state contract, you have other bidders in the room with you. It's a very transparent process, and if any of the other bidders thinks that anything is untoward at all, they're going to call one of us. I mean, I just hope they call.
We hope.
I just hope they call the AP first. But and so I think there are some strong natural checks on it, and it's really not as big an actual problem as it is maybe a perception problem, and I think that if Phil Scott can convince people to change the perception with this idea of the blind trust, then he's going to be okay with all of that.
Now, Terry, if Phil Scott decides not to change the arrangement, he goes ahead with this blind trust idea, how likely is it that the Democrats will raise it as a major character issue during the campaign?
I think I don't know, but it could backfire because for 15 years, this has been going on while he was a state senator and lieutenant governor, and Democrats did not publicly question this, and they instead voted him chairmanships and vice chairmanships of committees, and they were in on it. If there's collusion, they're in on it, and their administrations ran government for part of that time. So I think a lot of, as the poll shows, Phil Scott is well-liked. If you're going to try to say he shouldn't be well-liked, that kind of thing can really backfire in Vermont. People do not go so much for the negative.
Today on the program, we're looking at the 2016 gubernatorial race. We'll also touch on the race for lieutenant governor. We'd like to know, what are the key issues that you feel need to be addressed in the upcoming gubernatorial campaign, and whether or not there's a candidate out there that you're supporting already. Our phone number is 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Let's talk to Lisa in Bethel. Hi, Lisa. Welcome to the program.
Hi. I'm concerned about education funding this time around in the gubernatorial race.
And Lisa, are you thinking specifically now about some sort of property tax reform?
Yes, I think that simply looking at spending caps and consolidating school districts and giving up local control is moving away from what I think we should be doing, which is looking at the formula for how we actually fund education, and perhaps investigate what states are doing when they don't spend the same level that we spend, perhaps looking at income tax or other ways to fund it.
Okay, Lisa, thanks very much for your question and your comment. Dave, I have this memory of right before the 2014 election, the Democratic legislative leaders had a press conference over at the State House, and they said, "We hear you, voters. We hear you. Property tax reform is the issue of this election. And when we get into office in January of 2015, we're going to do something about it." A lot of people look at the education consolidation bill and say, well, that might be a good bill for opportunities for students around the state, but it might not lower property tax burdens very much. Is this a key issue coming up?
Well, I think in the case of that bill, Act 46, the chief backers in the legislature were saying, look, we're not promising this is going to save a lot of money for taxpayers. We think this is going to be a streamlining of governance, which we've needed to do in the view of the backers, and also that it's going to increase student opportunities by enabling kids to essentially have the offerings of larger districts. I think that this is a perennial issue. I mean, I think way back to the foundation formula in the late 80s, and then Act 60 and Act 68. And I mean, this is an evergreen issue in Vermont of how do we pay for public education. And so, sure, it's going to be an issue in the upcoming gubernatorial election, just because that's the nature of politics in the state.
Let's talk to Kitty, who's calling from Burlington. Hi, Kitty. What's on your mind today?
Hi. Oh, hi. We have a nice selection of people running for governor. And I happen to like Matt Dunn. I support him because he has a very good background with Google, and he worked for Avista, helping the country that way. And I like the fact that he's progressive. So that's where I stand right now.
All right, Kitty, thank you very much. A little bit later in the program, we'll take a little bit closer look at Matt Dunn's candidacy. But right now, we'll talk to Ellen in Middlebury. Hi, Ellen. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Yeah, nice to talk to you. Now, I'm not endorsing like any candidate, but I have a question. And my question is about the timing, because it's the fall of 2015, and the last time there was an open seat was 2010 for governor. And my memory is that, for instance, Peter Shumlin didn't even declare until May after the session ended of 2010, right? So that's almost a year after what is happening now. So why do you think so many candidates in Vermont, you know, it's a small state, are coming out a full year before even the primaries, whereas in 2010, they waited till the spring of the election year?
Great question, Ellen. Dave?
This is really unusual. I can actually remember earlier than 2010, I think back when Doug Racine was running against Jim Douglas. Jim Douglas was critical for Racine getting in, I think, in the late fall of the year before the election. This year, I think it's just a matter of, you know, as soon as Governor Shumlin announced in June that he was not running again, we in the media just started speculating about, well, who's going to do it? Who's going to be first? You know, who's coming? And you end up with a situation, I think, that generated a lot of pressure for anybody who, now obviously these candidates, you know, the Matt Dunns of the world or Shap Smith and others are thinking well in advance of when they were going to announce. But, right. But then all of a sudden this announcement by Governor Shumlin steps up the pressure in a huge way, and we're all out there in the media speculating about who's going to get in and so on and so forth. And so then you know, one person does. Shap Smith was first, and that immediately sets up just an intense pressure for everybody else to say, you know, what are you doing? And it's kind of almost a random thing. It's kind of hitting us like the weather, but we're definitely getting the political storm a little early this year.
Yeah, and I think it could also be a long slog for some of them. You know, like I was talking to a campaign manager of a previous campaign who's like, wow, I do not envy them because for the campaign manager, it's just, I mean, it will change the pace of things. It will be more expensive. It will, there'll be more ebbs and flows.
It's a long time to stay on message.
It's too. A long time to not screw up.
Today in the program, we are looking at the 2016 gubernatorial race. Our phone number, 1-800-639-2211. What do you think the big issues are of this campaign? We'd love to hear from you. This is Vermont Edition on VPR. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Today we're looking at the 2016 gubernatorial race. With us today, Terry Hallenbeck of 7 Days, Neil Goswami of the Vermont Press Bureau, and Dave Graham of the Associated Press. Our phone number, 1-800-639-2211. Also in the GOP primary is businessman Bruce Lissman, also the co-founder of Campaign for Vermont. He has the lowest name recognition of the 5 announced candidates, but that shouldn't be a big surprise because he's never run for either local or state office. Speaking to WPTZ Channel 5 after his campaign announcement late last month, Lissman said he would offer, quote, a new perspective to the race.
I'm not usual. I think in different terms, and I think and talk in a different way.
So, Neil, is Lissman's first job to get Vermonters to know who he is and what he stands for?
I think that's exactly right. And, you said not a big surprise about his name recognition, but I think it is somewhat of a surprise when you think back to the very large amount of money he spent on Campaign for Vermont and holding these public forums throughout the state on behalf of Campaign for Vermont. I think that's got to be somewhat of a disappointment for him to have, I think, 21% name recognition in the state after, you know, running this organization, this issue advocacy organization for several years. So, Yeah, number one thing for him right now is to make sure people know who he is and what he's about, and sort of introducing that story to Vermonters.
Now, Terry, on the national level, we see it certainly in the GOP presidential primary race, it's the year of the outsider. Look at the success of Donald Trump, Ben Carson, Carly Fiorina. Could those same dynamics take place at the state level in Vermont?
Sure. I think there is a piece of people being fed up with those who have tried and failed in state government. I think one of the interesting things out of the poll for Bruce Listman was that for a person who's not very well known, his unfavorability rating was relatively high, so that he had a 36% favorability rating and 23% unfavorability rating. So people who do know him, more of them have made an unfavorable impression, got an unfavorable impression.
Dave, do you think we're going to see any other candidates in this race? We've got the two. We hear sometimes, maybe Randy Brock, maybe Scott Milne, maybe Dan Feliciano. How likely is it that a third candidate will enter this race?
I really can't answer that. I just don't know. I mean, obviously we've talked to these folks and they've been cagey about what their plans are. One piece of speculation I've seen lately is that Randy Brock may run for lieutenant governor. The case of Scott Milne, the last time I talked with him, which is a couple of weeks ago, he was saying that, well, I want to have some impact on this, but it may not be as a candidate himself. So it remains to be seen what he'll do. Dan Feliciano, I suspect that if he looks at the thing realistically, he's probably going to say, I'm going to run again as a libertarian. Obviously, that hasn't historically won a majority in Vermont, but at least he can get his issues out there and so on. I think that if I had to bet right now, I might say that these two are going to be it for the GOP. On the Democratic side, I think that's pretty well a full dance card at this point, too, from what I can tell. But you never know. I mean, there's plenty of time. We've already been talking about how far ahead of the election this is. And it's entirely possible that things will happen in the upcoming legislative session that will create an issue for someone or that will make someone decide, as I remember Ruth Dwyer did way back in 2000, fairly late in the legislative session, she was so angry about issues that were popping in the House that she said, that's it, I'm running for governor. And so things like that can happen.
Let's switch over to the Democratic Party. First one in, House Speaker Shap Smith. In his announcement speech, he stressed the importance of maintaining strong downtown areas throughout the state.
I'm running for governor because the success of towns like Mooresville will be a vital part of Vermont's future. And because I want every Vermonter to have the opportunities and the choices that I've had.
So, Neil, as the Democratic campaign starts off, what are some of the strengths for Shap Smith?
He's been viewed as a very effective leader of the House Democratic Caucus. And I would think that the Speaker has got to be fairly pleased with the Castleton poll numbers that came out about him. He's got 61% favorability rating. He's got, I think, 61% know him, 50-plus percent favorability rating. And for a speaker, the only candidate so far in the race who's actually had to take positions and explain them to Vermonters, I think that is probably a good sign that more than 50% view him favorably, even though he's the only one that's actually had to stake out a position. So I think he's got a lot to build on there. If he's already above 50%, given the fact that the legislature just went through this debate over school district consolidation, he presided over same-sex marriage. He presided over the end-of-life choices legislation. So there were a lot of controversial things that he's been involved in, had to stake out positions on, and he still is viewed favorably by a majority of Vermonters.
Dave?
The other unique advantage that Shap has is that people, his fellow Democrats in the House really love him, and they're out there scattered all around the state.
Right.
And when he shows up in whatever House district in southern Vermont or the Northeast Kingdom or, you know, anywhere in Chittenden County or whatever, you know, you wouldn't think somebody from Loyal County has a huge base to start from, as candidates from the Burlington area do.
Right.
But he has that advantage of essentially having sort of these ambassadors for him scattered all around the state, and so when he goes to these events, it's going to be a welcoming situation for him, and you know, and the local rep will be someone who's well known in town, and hey, here's the speaker, please meet the speaker, and he's a great guy, and you should vote for him for governor, and that kind of thing, and I think that's going to be an advantage, especially in a state with retail politics mattering so much.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to John in Stratford. Hi, John. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thank you. Hey, I think the big thing is that on the Democratic side is that Chef Smith is linked with the Shumlin administration in terms of policy. And I think that what you're going to find in this year, especially with Jim Reardon being gone, in another big financial deficit coming up, you're going to find real problems this year in the legislature. You're going to find real problems with the school consolidation bill. People are going to be incredibly unhappy. And you're going to find real problems when property taxes go up a lot this coming year. So it'll be interesting to see how the other Democratic candidates differentiate themselves from the Shumlin-Smith policies.
Terry, what about that? I mean, and in addition to that, is Smith in a position where he really has to defend the actions or the lack of actions of the legislature over the past few years?
Yeah, and I would differentiate on that it's not necessarily that he's linked with the Shumlin administration. I think he will be able to distinguish himself from Peter Shumlin, the person. Where his difficulties will come is he might be blamed for the state of the state. Like, if we are having budget problems, well, why didn't he, as the House Speaker, do something about it? If Act 46, the school consolidation bill, doesn't work right for enough people, they'll put it on his shoulders. So that's – and his defense has been and will be there aren't easy answers to any of these questions, and he's at least tried, whereas perhaps his opponents have not been in the same position. And I also think, you know, Sue Minter is going to have a hard time saying that everything that happened the last 8 years is bad, or the last 5 years, I mean, because she was part of the administration and she wasn't doing school financing, she was doing transportation. But, you know, she can't exactly say everything has been wrong. And I think Matt Dunn could get in some trouble trying to say that everything his Democratic friends have done for the last 5 years is bad, because those are the same people that voted for those people. So there's not a lot of room to play there, I think, for some candidates.
Speaking of Matt Dunn, he announced his candidacy after holding some listening tours around the state. He currently works for Google as a community affairs manager. He's a former director of AmeriCorps Vista. Dunn says people want a governor who has experience in both the private and the public sector.
What I heard loud and clear is that people are looking for someone who can come with fresh ideas. I think what people are excited about is someone who's had a variety of experiences, both in the private sector, the public sector, the nonprofit sector, and they then want someone who's going to listen.
So, Neil, is Matt Dunn in a way setting himself up as the outsider candidate in this race?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's clearly, if you listen to his words, it's what he's trying to do. But again, this is a guy who served in the House and Senate. He's run two statewide campaigns before. You know, these are mostly his friends that have been in office while he's been with Google. I'm not sure that, you know, most people will agree that he's an outsider. He's been out of government for a few years, but he's also been a part of it in the past. And I'm not sure that sort of outsider status will stick with Matt Dunn.
Dave, he's raising a lot of money. I think he's up over $200,000 already. He raised $100,000 in a week right before the filing deadline. What kind of message does that send to the other candidates?
Well, Matt Dunn is a very skilled political organizer and fundraiser. He clearly has a network of folks around the state who have been kind of waiting for him, I think, to come back into electoral politics. And so he does have that advantage, and he's a very smart guy, and he's going to do what he can to make sure that he's got those pieces in place, the fundraising and the sort of campaign infrastructure. I also think that among the three Democrats, he probably has the most claim to the title outsider, because he has been absent from the scene for the entire Shumlin administration, since the 2010 primary, which he lost to Shumlin, and so I think he just sort of de facto, he won't have to, I don't think he can really afford to make a whole lot of noise about how, the Democrats who've been running the show have gotten it all wrong all these years and so on. But I think just de facto, he will be perceived as kind of an outsider, and that may work in his favor.
Now, Terry, Matt Dunn has the experience of running for statewide office twice before. He ran for governor in 2010. That was that crowded five-person field. He came in fourth, but he was quite close to number one. He also ran unsuccessfully for lieutenant governor in 2006. Does this help him set up an organization? He's been through this before.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it does help. I think at least to get off, get the ground running, and that's perhaps why he's been able to secure some. He knew to go to some big donors quickly and set up your campaign and that kind of thing. But the others who are running all have been on the scene and know people who've been involved and are getting the advice of people who've done this. I think that that factor will not be huge in the end.
Today on the program, we're looking at the 2016 gubernatorial race. Your thoughts, 1-800-639-2211. When we come back, we're going to look at the candidacy of Sue Minter and discuss what the progressives are up to. This is Vermont Edition on VPR. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. We're looking at the 2016 gubernatorial race today. With us, Neil Goswami of the Vermont Press Bureau, Terry Hallenbeck of 7 Days, and Dave Graham of the Associated Press. Your thoughts, 1-800-639-2211. Let's talk to John in Richmond. Hey, John, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Bob. Quickly, I'm looking for a candidate that's taking a comprehensive view of Vermont. Kind of an overriding where-are-we-going view, and is able to then express that, build consensus, and hopefully come up with specific ideas to make that happen. Now, that person also has to reconcile all the different groups and advocacies and all that, opinions on both sides of many issues, such as economic development and wind power, and they've got to be somewhat of a they've got to be a real leader, and I think what hopefully at least one person is going to kind of separate themselves from the rest of the group. That may be asking too much, but that's what I'm looking for.
All right, John, thanks very much for your phone call. 11 months to go. A lot of people have some time to stake out positions and show leadership. A third person in the Democratic race is former Transportation Secretary Sue Minter. She says economic issues will be her top priority.
I've really seen the challenges that people are facing and feel the economic anxiety that a lot of Vermonters have. And I believe in our potential, and I believe that Vermonters are looking for a leader that can make Vermont work. And I want to be that governor.
So, Terry, as Sue Minter starts her campaigns, what are her strengths?
She is smart, well-respected among people who've worked with her in the legislature. She has legislative experience, having been a Waterbury state representative. And then she has managerial experience, having been deputy secretary and for the last 8 months secretary of the Agency of Transportation. She played a big role in the state's Irene recovery, and that's all complicated stuff. You're doing, you know, complicated financial interactions with FEMA, and also just on the scene, helping communities and helping families rebuild. So I think she has that sort of just competence factor going for her. I do think she has a name recognition issue of, you know, the poll indicated that, and I think she disputes the level of name recognition that she has going against her, but that'll be her challenge.
Neil, how does Sue Minter carve out a niche for herself in this three-way race?
I think she's going to focus a lot on her management abilities. And people that have worked with her rave about her management abilities. She does have the legislative experience, but I think for what Vermonters are looking for, particularly after the Shumlin administration, they're looking for somebody who can take these sort of big ideas and effectively deliver them. I think that's been one of the problems that the Shumlin administration has had, is sort of being viewed as not able to manage these big ideas properly and deliver them to Vermonters. So, you know, if she can prove to Vermonters that she is a great manager and she can deliver on some big ideas, she might attract a lot of support.
She's also a very effective stump speaker. Neil and I remember we were at a news conference with her and Congressman Welch in East Montpelier, standing next to a bridge. They were talking about federal transportation funding, and she got up and she made the speech, and I think we both came away with this idea, you know, and this is early summer. This was, right, you know, a couple of months before she announced. And but even there, you could sort of say, boy, this woman's running for governor.
Right. That was,
well,
that
the
was
same
my
was true at the right at the Democratic dinner, the Curtis Award dinner in June.
Very
she probably
on the
had the most the best speech of the day.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Ann in Burlington. Hi, Ann. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Hi. I'd like to toss in Anthony's hat, Anthony Colina. He served in the legislature for many years. He's very well acquainted with the ups and downs and the ins and outs of governance. He has progressive ideas, and I've respected him as a man of integrity as well as good ideas for many years. I've heard some of your previous potential candidates on your interview programs, and one of them is so damn smart, he outsmarted himself. He was able with his brilliance to dodge some really good questions.
All right, Terry, let's look at the whole progressive situation. The progressives are saying right now, at least the leaders of the party are saying right now, they're not really impressed with any of these three Democratic candidates. They certainly, if they didn't support Peter Shumlin, they didn't run a candidate against him in his three terms of being elected governor. So how does it look for the progressives in the gubernatorial race? I think Anthony Polina is making it pretty clear that he thinks there should be a strong candidate, but it's not going to be him.
Right. I think he really likes being in the state Senate. He, you know, he ran for governor and various offices for many years and you know, with mild success. And then he finally got elected to the state Senate, and I think he's enjoying being able to affect policy. And I don't see him running for governor this time. And that is a dilemma for the progressives because, as you said, they didn't get in the way of Peter Shumlin's election, and they went on to regret it to some degree because he discontinued his push for universal health care. They just found him not living up to some of the things they really wanted, you know, a higher minimum wage, paid sick leave, various issues they wish he'd pushed harder. So they really want to not, you know, just support a Democrat, and yet they don't have anybody at the moment who's got high level name recognition and qualifications, and that, you know, so big problem for them.
And Dave, Senator Polina has also said it makes no sense from his point of view for the progressives to run a candidate just for the sake of running a candidate who might get 6, 7, 8, 9, 10% of the vote.
Right.
Because Polina says that's going to open the door to the Republican candidate.
That's an important calculus. Now, I know there are a lot of progressives out there who are really sick of hearing that, you know, because that's been the mantra every election cycle of, you know, hey, progressives, you don't want to be the spoiler and split the left and thereby elect Republicans. But, you know, I think this time around, you know, if they had somebody who really looked prepared to run for governor, and, you know, maybe if they elect Dave Zuckerman lieutenant governor, he's talking about running for lieutenant governor, and then a couple of years out or 4 years out or something, then, you know, you could consider somebody better prepared to run for governor. But at this point, you know, there just doesn't seem to be that standard bearer for the party right now. And so I think, Bob, you have it about right that, you know, there is a core of progressive voters out there who will pretty much get any decent candidate 10% of the vote or near that. And mm-hmm. but that frequently, you know, the margin between the Democrats and the Republicans is frequently smaller than that. So that's the issue.
I know progressives hate to hear that word spoiler, but if you break down the numbers, they're effectively Democrats and progressives there are challenging each other for many of the same voters. And you only have to look back to 2014 when Dan Feliciano ran as a Libertarian and more likely than not took votes away from Scott Milne. And had he not run, we could be under the Scott Milne administration right now.
Right.
So, I mean, this does happen in Vermont. Progressives don't want to hear that, and I can understand why. They believe that there should be more than two parties in the state. But the bottom line is, you know, it doesn't appear, at least based on past experience, that there's enough progressive support to elect a governor. So if they do run someone, it's likely to aid the Republican candidate.
You know, they would have to, as I say, that if they develop their own standard bearer and somebody who actually then could make big inroads into the Democratic voting bloc and even start picking up some moderate. I mean, you look at a Bernie Sanders, who's mm-hmm. never been a progressive by label, but has always been at that end of the political spectrum. And there's a guy who is able to start from the left and then reach out across the spectrum and generate tremendous support in the state. If the progressives developed a gubernatorial candidate who had that kind of potential, clearly it would be a different game than what we're describing right now. But I think that S-word spoiler is still very much in play right now.
Terry, that Castleton poll that we talked about earlier also asked the question about the legalization of marijuana in Vermont. 56% of those people responding said they would support legalization. 36% said they would not. These numbers show a trend up from the previous poll. Is this going to be a big issue in the legislative session and in the gubernatorial race?
Well, I think there definitely is going to be a lobbying effort to pass it in 2016. But I do think that all of the leaders so far have been really a lot of caveats of we'll do it if we can do it right. And doing it right, you know, has a broad definition. Whether they can get there, I don't think that's a guarantee still.
The biggest thing that people raise, policymakers are raising, is how do you test if somebody's under the influence of marijuana? And there doesn't seem to be an effective solution to that question right now. And that is something that, Speaker Smith has raised and others when they sort of qualify their support for it. So unless they can come up with a great idea on how to keep the roads safe and test for people under the influence, it's probably going to have some struggles.
And Dave, we got about 30 seconds left. There's a big question of if it is legalized, will it be sold at state stores?
Well, all those logistics remain to be worked out. I mean, obviously, you know, right now, if you want to buy a bottle of gin, you have to go to one of the state liquor stores. I mean, it seems like logically they might end up being the sellers of marijuana because people often talk about, it's another intoxicant, you know. And so I think that's possible, but I also think that nobody's really determined exactly how it's going to go.
Well, we'll be following these races for the next 11 months. Many thanks to our panel today, Dave Graham, Neil Goswami, and Terry Hallenbeck. Great to have you on the program.
Good to be here.
Thanks, Bob.
Coming up tomorrow on Vermont Edition, our guest is Jeff Weaver. Now, he's the campaign manager for Democratic presidential candidate Bernie Sanders. Jeff Weaver will discuss the strategy he's using to win the Democratic nomination. That's tomorrow on Vermont Edition. Vermont Edition is produced by Patty Daniels, Rick Sangari, and Sam Gale Rosen, with production assistance from Aaron Lucy. Alex Keefe directed the program. Our executive producer is John Van Hoosen. I'm Bob Kinzel. Thanks for listening.